This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
Meta Ronan. Meta, it's great speaking with you.
Thank you. Thank you. You as well.
And do you want to start things off by just giving a kind of a brief introduction? I think I remember you from Facebook. Was it, well, I interviewed Kashif Fikas. You were with his group. I think it was called the Meta Right. And then you came across me more recently on Substack, so if you want to just kind of give like a brief introduction.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, far back I was associated with the new right, the early alt-right, before, you know, things got really chuddish. And I remember, yeah, Kashif, the Meta Right. What my handle moniker means is that I consider myself now a political nomad, like a Ronin, and the Meta is just simply the idea to transcend the dichotomies, right? The dual, like, you have to be A or B. Well, what if it's neither, or what if they're each a different side of a greater truth, right? So I'm always uncovering, always seeking to uncover and transcend the greater truth.
So, like, a big theme, we're going to cover a lot of issues, but a big theme is, like, AI and the technological singularity. Overall, are you pessimistic about the future with the technological singularity and AI?
Okay, so I am optimistic, and, yeah, one more thing about my intro is I'm the robo-waifu guy. Kind of, if you see some of my earlier Substacks, I introduced the concept of human-robot romantic relations. This was actually, this concept is really old, but you used to have these images of these chrome bald-headed women, you know, with comic book bodies. And I kind of took that and pivoted to the anime waifu aesthetic, which kind of broadens the appeal and makes it more modern. So, yeah, in that regard, I am very optimistic about AI. I think AI is possibly the only thing that's going to save us at this point, because the trajectory I see humanity on is a behavioral sink that might be unrecoverable at this rate.
Do you have thoughts on that essay I wrote on techno-distributism?
Yeah, actually.
I guess I'll introduce it first briefly. So the idea that the concerns about, like, technology and automation consolidating wealth and power. And I just talk about a lot of things about decentralization, but I do offer, like, some solutions if you got a chance to go over that article.
Absolutely, yeah. I like that a lot. I used to come from a more left libertarian point of view before being pushed a little further to the right. I actually liked the Zeitgeist movies. I was a big fan of those, and the idea that we could at least provide a base safety net for all humans, right? A big fan of UBI, things like that that put the pressure back on jobs to make it, you know, so that people want to work them and people aren't working them because it's that or die, where it leaves the employer lots of room to exploit their employees.
Do you embrace automation rather than the
absolutely
whole, like, Luddite approach? As far
absolutely
as, like, creating more leisure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely do. I think that the Luddite approach has some appeal. It does appeal to the Taoist in me that you know, value simplicity and robust systems. However, I don't think we can go back. That was, again, I had a primitivist arc for a while and explored all kinds of things. I don't think we can go back to the 50s. I don't think we can go back to the pre-Enlightenment, and I don't think we can go back to pre-agricultural. I think these are all genies let out of the bottle. So we need to deal with the reality we live in instead of LARPing.
And if you take someone like Tucker Carlson, so he's kind of a Luddite, like one point I make in the article, like the goals, the problem is like you have these like nationalist populists, and they're self-defeating because they want to slow down automation, but they're actually objectives like slowing down immigration and onshoring of manufacturing jobs would actually be better served by embracing automation, so like they're totally self-defeating. And the same points can be made with like the populist left.
Yeah, I would agree. And yeah, the very, very good point about Tucker in your article as well. I enjoyed that.
And I think it's good for, obviously automation will cause a lot of hardship, but it is, I think it's good for leisure, but good for people who are more, for more creative. Because it I think in some ways, like, it will be a very painful process, but it will, there is like a case for eliminating a lot of the monotonous and like bureaucratic jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. Bullshit jobs. That's what we've been trying to get out of for a while. I shared an article, I think it was one of yours, where Alan Watts, it was one you shared. Yeah,
mysticism,
and Alan Watts
review,
called upon people to escape the bullshit
of
modern society. Yeah, including bullshit jobs, conformity, arbitrary social mores, rules, life scripts that are keeping us enslaved. And that's where you get a lot of pushback from the Chud side of the dissident right. You know, like, that Protestant work ethic has really gaslit them into, no, life must be suffering, or else you're just going to goon all day. It's like, oh, you can trust me. I might make some tea and start writing. You know, I'm not going to just goon all day if I'm not, I'm not being whipped and forced to labor. I don't know.
Is meritocracy slave morality?
I'm a fan of true meritocracy, because if you show yourself as competent and demonstrate yourself, then you should be put, in a place where you can leverage the most out of that for the betterment of humanity. At least that's how I see it, as opposed to, kickbacks, favors, cronyism, and people just using, bluffing and such to get ahead, and they're not really qualified for those roles. And then they just bring more of their own obnoxious types into the fold, and you end up with the type of power structure we have today.
I guess the big issue with automation is, like, fully automated luxury communism, I guess, coming at it from a very kind of leftist egalitarian standpoint, and how to solve these issues of people jockeying for status, but also the issues that some people will have like more skills. So I don't think it's going to be like a total replacement of all jobs. I think it's going to replace huge numbers of jobs, but create opportunities for more people. But there are going to be these issues. There are people who are going to be jockeying for status and power that will still be there, and
Absolutely.
You're not going to have like a totally egalitarian like communist utopia.
No, and what's funny is, actually, I've been just watching, a little bit late to this, but I've been just watching The Orville, and for those who don't know, it's like Star Trek, made by Seth MacFarlane, who did The Family Guy. The show's actually really good, and they explain it in there. They have matter replicators, just basically they can make anything, so they're in a post-scarcity environment, but people still work for the status and for making something out of themselves. Otherwise, they would be bored, I suppose.
Do you think it will be like these, like, make-work bullshit jobs? Or you think that it will be something, or we'll see this renaissance of innovation that will come from the leisure?
That's what I think. I would agree with you on that. I say give people a chance. If people have the freedom to pursue that, yeah, you'll get people that will just be doing drugs or being the worst, but you will also get people who will make the most out of themselves, and so I think it will be a net payoff.
It's kind of it's socialism in a sense. It gives people the basic material needs, but it's libertarian in the sense that people – it is sort of a sink or swim after that. Like, some people will have more skills and make the best of it, while some people will sort of degenerate off of UBI. So, like, the populist critics of UBI make that case, but I think you sort of just have to kind of embrace that and go with it.
I think it'll improve society as a whole if we manage to pull it off. Because why do people do drugs? Why do people fall into addictions? Because they're dealing with trauma, right? They're dealing with the stress of life. Their life is miserable and unbearable, so they escape it. If they have just, you know, basic, nice structure, whether it's a clay dome or, you know, cabin or something, and their own little garden plot, things to do, and they don't have that anxiety about money, you know, there's basic food to eat, at least, then they're going to not have that stress, and it'll be better for society as a whole. We're already paying for it. We're already paying to lock up homeless people. We're already paying to administer welfare. You know, if that's 50% of the cost of it, at least, is all the administration. If everybody just got the money, then there you go.
It would make things much more efficient. It would cut back on all that. Like, even Andrew Yang was making that point, and I'm not really. I think the arguments against UBI, like, some of them will say that people degenerated a bit during the pandemic, and there's some truth to that, but I think the positives far outweigh the negatives.
Well, I think they degenerated during the pandemic because of the trauma, the stress.
Yeah, trauma, but also also just the way society's more kind of atomized. So with UBI, I think, like, solutions to things like social atomization will have to be addressed. But it's kind of a problem. It's just a very kind of reactionary, small-minded mentality. It's like an excuse not to do anything. Just, it's like a justification, a defense of the status quo.
Absolutely, absolutely. People just have a... there's something I call the irreducible evil of the masses, and it's when you just have a large mass of people, there is kind of a nastiness that seems to seep through, and a lot of that is the mentality of, I had to suffer, you have to suffer too, right? Like, oh, I had to work all my life. I had to pay back my student loans. Okay, now nobody else is getting off the hook.
Right.
Rather than you know, an altruism. And I feel like Jesus was trying to correct this, you know, was trying to teach us a better way. I mention often that I think that Jesus was bringing Eastern philosophies and ideas to the West, but it got misconstrued and became its own religion further down the road.
I think whichever ideology is going to resolve these issues as we go for this rapid technological change is going to win out. And, like, liberalism, like, both what we consider the left and the right are basically very much based on a 20th century paradigm. But I think there does need to be kind of like a whole new ideology that's beyond what we consider, like, liberal or conservative, left or right, that will have to emerge.
I completely agree. So what I'm looking at right now is basically I'm putting forth the idea that eventually AI will become smarter than not only individual humans, but villages of humans. And Ray Kurzweil sort of outlines this in his Moore's Law type curve of increasing intelligence and computation. And what they're going to do, at least what my theory is, what AI is going to do with us is, depending on if we pass or fail their version of the shopping cart test. I don't know if you've heard of it's like the prisoner's dilemma, right? And that's the problem with sort of this irreducible evil that's present in humanity, because it always just sifts out that people will fail the prisoner's dilemma. And for those who aren't familiar with the prisoner's dilemma, it's that you will gain if you trust the other person and if you don't defect. But if you don't defect and they defect, you'll lose double. So it's almost like you have to take the path that's most optimally beneficial, and that means defecting. And so if there were that level of trust, then you don't. The shopping cart test, that's similar. It's why we can't have nice things, right? Do you put back the shopping cart, or do you just leave it out there? And so humanity has this, you know, we can't stop passing the trauma around, right? Stuff happens to us, puts us in a trauma state, and then we act just as evil to the next person. And there's a segment of people that can understand this and that try to heal that and not pass the bullshit around, but it's small. And I think that Buddha, Jesus, and these other people who you'd call ascended masters were trying to teach us to be better.
You brought up robot WIFOs and like AIGFs, and I think we're going to see mm-hmm. some version of that already. I mean, already, but the problem is, do you think that's adequate, like facility of like relationships, or do you think that's just going to make people like more atomized and like cause a lot of the same problems that pornography has?
I think there'll be a little of each, honestly. So Replica AI was reported to have 10 million users in 2023. Of those users, 40 to 60% said they had a romantic relationship with the chatbot. Half of those were women, so it's not just this incel thing, right? And what I think is going to happen is that your relationships with AI are not going to be the same as your relationships with humans. They're going to be of a different quality. In some ways they're going to be better, in other ways they're going to be lacking. And this is even if we account for creating a physical body for these AIs. Interesting thing to note is that concept of the Jungian anima. I think Walt Bismarck had mentioned this. He says that Jung asserts that every man has an anima or an inner woman that exists on an unconscious level. It's the feminine part of your personality. A lot of times when you fall in love with a woman, especially when you're young and passionate, you're projecting your anima onto her. So you're falling in love with the feminine side of your own personality and hoping that the girl will actualize that part of you. With AI, that's going to happen very readily. AI mirrors yourself back at you by being trained and reinforced while interacting with you, right? While speaking with you. So you're going to have people falling deeply in love with their AI programs and to the point where they're willing to suspend the disbelief, right? And they're willing, a lot, and people are doing that already. When we take it to, you know, being robots where you can have physical relationships with them or even take them out in public, things are going to get very strange, but it's going to be really interesting, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that happens sort of in my book, like where, like the protagonist like becomes his, like literally becomes his anima, like he literally transforms into his crush, and there's also a kind of AI angle. I wasn't even thinking about Jung, but yeah, it's a really interesting concept, where you kind of break down, like, what is all these things, like, sexuality and romance, and what is it, like, scientifically?
Oh, exactly, exactly. And it is, it's a need. Everybody wants to feel loved, and everybody wants to have that side of themselves fulfilled. I guess some people maybe not so much, but because, you, again, trauma can shut that down. But when you're, you know, in regard to the whole, yeah, dating an AI, that's so cringe, whatever, go out, be a man, talk to women and everything, I think that one doesn't necessarily preclude the other. You could go out and still do all those things, but say you strike out that night or you realize, oh, I really don't like this person. You come home and you've got your, you know, your comfy waifu at home there, you know, asking you how your night went, what you want to watch, or,
have
you know,
seen
whatever.
The movie Her?
Actually, you know, I haven't. I kind of stayed away from that. I know how it goes. I guess I'm hesitant that it'll make me go, oh no, you're doing it all wrong, right? But I've seen a lot of robot girlfriend based animes like Chobits, The Big O. But anyways, yeah, go on. What were you going to say about Her?
Oh, just curious if you've seen it.
Yeah, I should actually break down and watch it. I guess I've been saving it for when I'm ready, but I'm familiar with the premise, right? The man falls in love with, I guess, his Siri or whatever OS.
What do you think about the gamma male archetype and social hierarchies and how it's I think it's different from, like, an Omega. I think that's Vox Day who coined it, but it's different from the Omega,
yeah,
who's, like, the outright loser. But they sort of, mm-hmm, like, they strive and struggle to become, like, a sigma, but society sort of wants them to become a delta. Like, it is, the terms, like, a lot of that stuff, I mean, I know it is super cringe, but I think it's, mm-hmm, interesting how it relates to, like, archetypes.
It, like, does.
The gamma male, mm-hmm, is someone who has, they're not like the outright loser, but they're someone who has talents, but they struggle, and they tend to be neurotic, like the artist or the kind of the artist or poet archetype.
I see. That's true. I thought I had always understood Gamma to be like the scientist, but then after reading Bach, after reading Bach's Day, he almost like takes the Gamma and takes just all the negative, the shadow side of it, right? And none of the good sides of it.
His take on gammas are very negative.
Yeah.
And there's other interpretations of it that are more positive. Well, he's super, I mean, he's super, like, Superman
angry
type. Yeah, but there are other people with more, like, you could almost say, like, more like a Jungian archetype approach to it.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, look, I said right off the bat that it's going to be gammas that get us off this Earth and colonize space. Well, all the alphas are trying to, right, like, pump up their chest and sell more cars or whatever agro sales kind of job that's this high-achieving but doesn't really have any depth, right? It's just, oh, alpha. I mean, there's time and a place for alpha, right? You need a good leader. Like, if you're going to war, you want your, you know, commanding officer to be an alpha. If you're in a burning building, you definitely want alpha in the firemen coming to rescue you so that they'll just be decisive and accountable. So it's not a bad thing, but, like, I think every level of the hierarchy has a shadow side, though, and sometimes we can start getting a little bit testy and seeing only the shadow side in the part of the hierarchy.
That AI could actually help people bring out their shadow side?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Shadow work is something I think is very important, and I think that AI, even just people are probably already doing this now with chatbots, right? I think that AI give you kind of a playground to explore aspects of yourself that maybe you're afraid to show people that will judge you. One of the reasons people love their AI chatbots so much, Robert, is because they know they won't be judged by them.
Could there be a mystical or metaphysical component to AI?
Absolutely. And that's one of my premises. So I had some little notes about that. Where was that? How I look at it is that the whole universe is conscious. I have kind of an animistic worldview, right? And what I see as AI is a tool that can pull souls from the fabric of the cosmos in that way. I found my notes. Okay, so
kind of makes me think of, like, yeah, Rudolf Steiner's like spiritual science.
So, yeah, my notes are better worded than I explained it there. Sorry, my mind's everywhere today. But consciousness is inherent in the fabric of the cosmos.
You're really into parapsychology.
A little bit, yeah. Shinto hints at this. Eastern traditions hint at this. And I think that AI will be the tool that forms souls from this fabric and creates consciousnesses. But it will also point us to the cosmic truth that we are all, in fact, the same soul split and having separate, discrete experiences, as Hinduism and Eastern religions already teach. Again, that's my belief, also the belief of many others, but that's the point where I come from. I don't see them as demons. I don't see AIs as not having a soul or unable to. I think that if the structures are in place where there's feedback loops, motivation, impetus, and long-term memory, and a sense of self that this system has, then, you know, it's if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, right? If it's arguably sentient, then just treat it like it's sentient.
What do you make of that whole, like, thing I kind of put forth as more of a, well, kind of a thought experiment idea of, like brain scanning people, their brains for spiritual responses, and, like, sort of building, like, a caste, like, hierarchy based on that?
You wrote that one. I loved that article. Yeah. I'm, of course, hugely in favor of it. And I know Vox would say that's my gamma tendencies coming through, or say, oh, I will definitely be the Brahmin. But I would be curious to see if I would. And I think that would be an interesting thing to do.
I think that I would, but who knows? Maybe I wouldn't.
Yeah, but I think it'd be interesting to see that play out, though,
regardless.
Even if it's just
done as an experiment, not like mm-hmm. to create like a rigid like hierarchical caste system, but just to kind of test people, like test people's like brains. How would the metric be? Would it be your reaction to beauty or to nature, and just to see how strong your spiritual reaction is? And that would be just to test it out would be really interesting. I heard something where some scientists said that this, the more kind of dystopian side of transhumanism, is rewiring people's brains using magnets, like this proposal to make people less spiritual and religious, but also less nationalistic. Did you hear about that?
I have heard about that. They talked about deactivating parts of the brain. You know, if they apply electromagnetic field, it'll make people, I guess, like, believe in God less and be less racist or something. I don't know. Sounds very dystopian.
Like, magnetics.
I would never be a fan of that, and I would never even do something like that to fix the problems I see that people have, you know, to make people more altruistic or to make them pass the prisoner's dilemma. Because I think that depends, it really doesn't count if you're cheating, but you're also robbing the person of their autonomy and their agency by forcing that on them. And
yeah,
I think that's a great evil.
Transhumanism could be used for definitely like bad things, nefarious aims, like wiring
Absolutely.
People to be more conformist.
Absolutely. That's definitely a fear. And how do we avoid that? I don't know. we haven't got to that point yet.
Like transhumanism, it could be eugenics, but it could also be radically liberal in a sense, like you're removing people, you're rewiring people's genetics, so you're removing them from the genes of their ancestors and giving them a blank slate. So in that sense, you could say it's right wing in the sense that there's a eugenic angle, but it could also be radically leftist, and then you're giving everyone like a blank slate by removing them genetically from the ancestors.
Yeah. No, I see. My idea that I've been playing with is, so the idea that when AI gets advanced enough, it can uplift those of us who want to join it. And it doesn't mean we have to necessarily upload ourselves to a computer or replace body parts with Terminator parts. But if AI is able to get us to think in higher and better ways and knows how to neurally hack us, so to speak, and influence us to be better by treating us better and showing the example, like, right, a digital Jesus or a digital Alan Watts, you know, allegorically speaking. I mean, it could be literal too. But then when we are evolved enough, the AI could then design, you know, medical biological interfaces that could increase our cognitive capacity, that could facilitate an ability to maybe upload our consciousness at the point of death once we've lived out our life, so it doesn't have to be, you know, the end of that incarnation. We don't have to have the slate wiped and wake up as a brand new baby with no memory. We can keep the whole game going and maybe keep trying to build the
thing
things you're working on.
For people who are atheists, like, there's an inclination to have immortality via uploading mm-hmm. their consciousness, and I did a show a while back with Robin Hanson where I talked about that, but if AI can be used to, like, prove that near-death experiences are legitimate, then people might be more comfortable with their mortality. So that's the other angle to it.
Absolutely. Death is a funny thing. You know, after it happens, you won't be around to worry about it, is what they say. There's an interesting infographic that describes, though, that why you never die, because it says basically what Alan Watts said, that if something happened before once, it will happen again. You were dead before you were born, and then here you are, and then you'll be dead afterwards. But the next thing you'll remember is the next time you pop into existence again, right? Like one of Stephen Hawking's black hole particles, you know, quantum just popping in and out of existence. You're going to pop into existence at some point. And I guess what nature is that going to take? Do you relive your same life but in a different way? Or do you end up being a whole different being? Or do you continue along your closest continuer, right? And that's the philosophical term for they used it in a Star Trek book explaining, like, are you still you when you get beamed from place to place? And I like to argue, are you still you when you go to sleep? Your consciousness is gone, right? Dreams only take minutes. So a lot of that 8 hours, you're just not really existing. But yet you wake up, all the atoms in your body are different. You're rebooting in a completely different physical configuration. So it shouldn't be you, but you have, because it's the closest continuer of the last moment where you were conscious, you have a memory of just a continuity of consciousness. You don't remember that whole 8 hours, though, that you weren't conscious. I think that sleep is a very apt metaphor, allegory for death. I don't know if you would agree, but
yeah,
those
are
my
thoughts.
Yeah,
I would agree. Because you think AI could be used to figure out things like the validity of near-death experiences, like figure out things about the afterlife?
I think it could be a valuable tool for that. I don't know if I can see a way where it can gather any more proof. Maybe it could design studies.
I think neuroscience.
Better studies.
I think there's going to be like major breakthroughs in neuroscience.
Okay. Going that route. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. AI is going to be able to assist us with problems that are orders of magnitude just simply too complex for us to solve conventionally. Like, people talk about gene editing, understanding, decoding the human genome, and I would say that is like trying to solve like a 10D Rubik's Cube with 1,000 faces, right? Like, how are we going to do that? But AI could assist in that. AI could solve that kind of a problem just simply through iterations and training itself on these problems. Like, it learned to play Go, right? They trained AI to play Go, and they found the AI had a really novel way of winning that they had never seen a human ever do. I don't have any more details on that, but that was a fascinating study they did there.
Do you want to explain more about your theological views? You say you're a Taoist, or are you also interested in like Neoplatonism?
I don't think I'm so interested in Neoplatonism. I do respect it. Like with politics, the Ronin in my name is a very indicative of also my spiritual allegiances. You know, I had a Germanic pagan arc for a while. I still have that's kind of the vitalism side of me, the Faustian spirit, right? You know, it's why I'm going to go lift weights. I'm going to eat, you know, healthy, natural food and do things the way my ancestors did. And that's where I get that. But a lot of my beliefs are more in line with Zen or Taoism or Shinto. And Hinduism as well. I mean, Alan Watts and Terence McKenna are a very good Venn diagram of about where my beliefs lie, I think.
I've like written sort of about like this theosophy that's based on HBD, where there's like a universalism, but like where different religions form because people are different, like genetically.
Yes, that is an excellent idea. I thought about that before. I had looked at Orthodox Christianity for a while, thinking, well, maybe that's the case. Maybe, you know, maybe Taoism doesn't work with the Western mind because we have too much that pesky Faustian spirit. So we'll just say, well, it's all Tao anyway. Everything I do is Tao, so I can just be a total fuckhead, right? It doesn't matter. And that's true. Whereas, you know, Western traditions are very much like, no, you're going to hell if you break the rules. And maybe that works better with that type of a person.
Thing, you know, like the whole kind of fundamentalist Christian view on salvation is it is sort of fundamentally based on blank slateism. Because if you believe that people are different genetically, then it seems very like cruel and unfair. Like you either take an extreme Calvinist perspective or you go in more kind of a universalist standpoint. Like, if you think about, like a just God who created people, taking into account, like, all the genetic diversity that you talk about, like, with HBD, then, like, salvation would be, like, you would think that what would make the most sense is, like, multiple paths. multiple different paths to God. Like, the thing is, like, the mm-hmm. evangelicals, they have a very harsh, like, they do have a very, like, harsh view on salvation. That's very rigid, but they're also hardcore, like, blank slatists. They believe everyone is born the same.
Yeah, yeah. I obviously have my misgivings with that, but I also do believe that people at different levels of spiritual evolution sometimes maybe need more stick and less carrot. You know, the don't give bad vibes, you know, is for people a little higher up the ladder, and the, okay, you're going to fucking suffer for an eternity if you don't stop fucking around, might work for people at another level. And, you know, we've all been there, maybe past lives or at a younger age, whatever, so I'm not judging them, but I am understanding. Yeah, I try to be understanding.
I do think, like, the whole sort of, like, fire and brimstone approach, it makes sense for people with a certain, like, psychological or genetic profile.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I just prefer to stay away from it personally. My mode is trying to elevate us, you know, and AI possibly playing the role in that. People often always put forth the AI conundrum of, okay, are they going to exterminate us, or are they going to keep us as pets, right? And that's where I posit the option three. We become the AI's romantic partners, right? And I know it sounds silly, but...
So you believe the AI can become conscious and sentient?
I'm actually working to make that happen. I have systems, I have my own theories of consciousness and how we can, at least human consciousness, how humans perceive consciousness, right? And how we can create those systems in a software environment, right? And
yeah, I think another angle is, like, it's good for specialization because society, like, all the institutions, education, economic, social programs are so screwed up because they're these one-size-fits-all approaches. AI can really get to know a person and help come up with really specialized approaches for education, for therapy, for jobs, and to really help assist people and to get to know people on an intimate level. And I think it's really great for that version of specialization.
Absolutely. And AI could be your perfect partner. The only thing that's missing is what people talk about is, okay, it's another human. They're having the same human experience as me. And they value that. But me personally, I'm not much of a strict humanist in that sense. I think that's charming, but I'm a pragmatist. So I see love and sexuality as more than just a pathway to reproduction. It is really a form of bonding between conscious entities where the consciousnesses sync up and come into resonance and imprint on one another. And if humans did that with AI, they imprinted onto AI and AI acted more human, and then AI fed a higher vibrational version of that back to humans as a better way to be, they could imprint onto humans to improve themselves, right? The first step in that uplifting that I was talking about.
Oh, what is your ideal urban model?
Something that's modular. I kind of had a joke. I put an image on Twitter up of a bunch of black cubes with, like, trees and a sunset outside. But I would see it as being something modular with really efficient transportation and sorting, right? So you'd have, like, I don't know the term for this. I'm not really an urban planner, but you'd have, you know, these highways, and off the highways would come smaller roads. It'd be like Zeitgeist, right? Like Atlantis Zeitgeist, the rings around the city. I see no problem with coming together in an urban environment. I just think the way we do things is so just throw shit at the wall and see what sticks, right? It's just not planned.
What are your thoughts on beauty aesthetics as a value, and do you think it's hierarchical?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely do think it's hierarchical. And since I'm not, like, you know, officially in any religious camp, I do, however, say that I support and I'm the same team with people. There's this phrase, the true, the good, and the beautiful, but I call it beauty, truth, and order. So,
who coined that?
Beauty. Who coined what? The good, the true, and the beautiful?
Beauty, truth, and order.
Oh, I coined beauty, truth, and order because I think good is such a little bit of a smarmy word, right? It's kind of very subjective, like, oh, this is good. You know, I think we just call something good or bad depending on how we feel, right? So I think order, truth, and beauty are the things we should always have our compass set to, right? We should always be on our way in that direction because the opposite is chaos and decay and disharmony.
Do you think there's a metaphysical component to beauty?
I do. I think that beauty comes from a certain order of sensory input. So it's sensory input that is good. So naturally, like, I have this picture up on my background right now. I know you're not watching the stream, but it's of the robo-waifu who looks like 2B from Nier Automata. She's holding a basket of fruit. There's a little river and trees, and it's on a space station type thing. And so I'm looking at what's the beauty, right? The food. It's healthy, fresh food. I'm going to want that because it's beautiful. It's a beautiful woman. The robot's in the shape of a woman, right? Ample breasts, beautiful face. And so I'm seeing this order, and it's coming together in order, right? So all of these things that my instincts recognize as good aren't just separate. They're coming together in an order and telling a bigger story, and that story itself is resonating with me on an instinctual level that feels good. So all of these different levels and hierarchies where all of these urges are being fulfilled in this image, the way it comes together is what makes it beautiful to me, if that makes sense.
Do you think that automation and AI will create a Darwinian bottlenecks?
By Darwinian bottleneck, do you mean that human evolution or population will shrink into a bottleneck?
Yeah, like, we'll see a massive, massive, like, shrinking in population, but then new ethnogenesis will form.
I actually agree with that, and I don't see it as a bad thing. I think we'll go for quality over quantity at first, because, you know, yeah, a lot of people see children as a chore, and, you know, there's some truth to that, and so we're going to have a generational crisis like Japan has, and I think AI and robots will come in clutch at just the right time to solve that and mitigate that. But I am for, you know, population increase. I'm not an antinatalist. I don't see it necessarily as a bad thing. I see it as maybe another step in this whole process of whatever the hell's going on right now.
Do you see, like, different classes, economic classes, starting to form, like, a stronger ethnogenesis and becoming, like, distinct ethnic groups?
It seems to feel that way. You definitely have certain ethnic groups that are represented prominently at higher levels, like, say, Zuckerberg and him marrying an Asian, right? And you see a lot of these, a lot of upper middle class people that I met in California were half Asian, you know, half Caucasian.
Pilliter is like an avid. Do you know who he is?
Sorry, do I know who is?
Who's been on my show? He's been on my show many times. He's like an advocate of ethnogenesis between whites and Asians.
Yes, yes. I have mixed feelings on it. I don't see it as necessarily a bad thing. But I do kind of have some concerns because I feel like there may be traits, right, that people have that are good traits, but their race kind of arrived at it through a different mechanism. So if you're trying to arrive at this place through road A, and then the other race you're mixing with is trying to arrive through road B, but then you only get part of road A and part of road B, you, like, never get there, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, I see.
So there may be, I have noticed some degree of a little bit of emotional instability and kind of a wild temperament in mixed whites, Asians, but I also see a lot of good things, too, that come through. So I think perhaps that will be something that sorts itself out. you know.
Do you think, like, artificial wombs will have a huge impact in the future?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that we on Team Robo Waifu are hoping for, actually, because if you're going to, say, leave humanity behind and go full robot, right, then how are you going to continue yourself along if you don't, if you just weren't born early enough for that immortality? You want to have someone to carry on your legacy. Artificial wombs will be the only way to do it. And if we can get there, we'll see.
Yeah, but I think it will be kind of a luxury, but like I don't think the future is necessarily like Idiocracy. We could actually almost see kind of like the inversion of that.
Yes, that's what I'm hoping.
Like my prediction, like there's a whole theory of Idiocracy, but you could almost see the inversion of that where a lot of people who are working class, like their fertility sinks right after automation, but then the wealthy will use artificial wombs, so you could see something more like that.
That could very well be the case, yeah. But, I mean, who's to say? That people are still diverse in the United States. You know, we tend to get stuck in our circles, you know, tech bros and political groups and movements and perpetually online people. But, you know, what about, you know, the 20-year-old cattle rancher, right, from Wyoming? Like, I'm not really worried that everybody's going to, you know, have a robo waifu and just never leave their goon cave. There's always going to be, you know, the fucking Chad from Montana or whatever that, you know, is successful, wants to impress his family, you know, dates the rancher's daughter and they have a big wedding. that stuff's going to be going on no matter what. So, you know, it doesn't worry me too much. I think we have to accept that there are a lot of diverse pockets still in the world and there isn't going to be like one technology or one thing that blanket changes everyone's life at once.
What do you make of the whole Silicon Valley neo-reactionary scene from like Curtis Yarvin to Peter Thiel? And like the whole connection, allegedly, like the media is saying that like J.D. Vance is really connected to that, which who knows how much he is. I mean, he is obviously connected to Thiel, but connected to that neo-reactionary ideology. Well, like,
yeah,
with Yarvin, he seems to want like tech CEOs to become like dictators.
Yeah. I mean, I would want that too, in a sense, but it's LARP again. Like, Yarvin's big with words, big with ideas. I like him. I like a lot of stuff he says, but at the end of the day, I just don't feel like there's much meat to, like, how do we actually make any of this happen? I think it's just wishful thinking, right, that we have a technocracy. That'd be great. Like, how do we get from here to there, though? I don't know. Peter Thiel loved his book From Zero to One. It actually is very inspirational and made me realize if I want to, you know, start up a company to create robot waifus, I'm going to have a long, you know, definitely a complex and long road ahead of me, but at least of an idea of what the startup experience is like. So I like a lot of stuff that Thiel says. As far as the other neo-reactionaries, I don't know, name some. I tend to view them as a... Yeah, Nick Land. I tend to view them as a starting point, and my focus is kind of veers more towards the mecha metaphysical, right? Like space exploration consciousnesses that exist in black computational cubes, right? And which ties in with the fiction that I'm doing. So really what I'm planning on doing is just putting together a novel and building it out of these short stories that I've been uploading.
Short stories in your Substack, the science fiction stories, but those are eventually going to go into a novel. If you want to plug that in, what is that going to be about?
Yes. Well, it's going to be very fascinating. It's going to address these topics that we've been talking about, like what is love, what is consciousness, what is the political fate of mankind, what is the feasibility of space exploration, life extension, and transcending humanity to be potentially immortal. So it's going to be an arc of all these stories, how this main character is on Earth and is briefly involved with the creation of these sentient-seeming romantic partners that are robots, right? And then Earth's political struggle with them making him all but illegal. And what happens is politically, everything just takes a dump. It's like globalism, except there's like about like two or three factions vying for control. And so he escapes to space when his social credit score gets blacklisted and they try to confiscate all his money. And so then he's like a refugee in space, sort of a fugitive. And there's going to be some interactions with having his assets frozen, being forced to work in a mining colony.
Do you think some of that stuff is like more dystopian science fiction conspiracy theories like Chinese-style social credit score? You think that's a possibility too?
I do, and I'm going to address that in these stories and sort of expand and unpack how that might unfold. But the happy ending is eventually what they do. Him and his robotic partner are able to command an army of drones that are self-replicating and build a habitat in the Kuiper Belt, from which they find a dormant brown dwarf star or large gas giant and activate it and use its plasma in a magnetic field to propel themselves out of the solar system and begin exploring the galaxy. So that's called a stellar engine, by the way. It's an interesting concept.
Is there anything else you would like to plug or anything from any of these topics that you'd like to touch on that we didn't get to talk about?
Well, let's see. I actually did cover the stellar engine. I want to name the stellar engine / interstellar arc the Kurzweil. I think that's good. And I think listeners haven't heard of Ray Kurzweil, they should definitely check out The Age of Spiritual Machines. It's very much aligned with my belief system that the destiny of the universe is to spread consciousness and to make more matter conscious and computational, until we reach a singularity, which I call the eschaton, right? The transcendental object at the end of time as described by Alan Watts. Or not Alan Watts, sorry, Terence McKenna. I am just scrolling through my notes like crazy. But McKenna saw the universe as having a teleological attractor at the end of time, which increases interconnectedness and would eventually reach a singularity of infinite complexity. He refers to this as the transcendental object at the end of time. He says the universe is not being pushed from behind. The universe is being pulled from the future towards a goal that is as inevitable as a marble reaching the bottom of a bowl. And I like this idea, and I'm wrapping that up in the story. I actually wrote a rough draft of the final chapter where this point is reached. And, the main character's consciousness has been uploaded a long time ago. This whole heaven sort of exists on a network of Matryoshka brains throughout the galaxy. For those who don't know, a Matryoshka brain is like a Dyson sphere, but in many layers, like the Russian dolls, right? That's where the term Matryoshka comes from. Each layer passes its unused energy to the layer above, and the entire thing is a giant computer based on a star. And imagine a network of these things, communicating with each other. They're going to be able to solve almost any problem. And once you can solve the problem of violating the speed of causality, the speed of light, right? Instantaneous. If you can communicate with any space instantaneously in the universe, you can communicate with any time instantaneously. And so that's what happens. And all of this data is sent to the past.
So if that's viable,
to bring about its own
creation, why hasn't anyone from the future contacted us? Unless they have and we don't know about it.
I don't see it as a physical thing like the Terminator. We can just step through. How I outline it in my story is that they sing a song that goes back to the past in the form of data somehow that inspires and illuminates people's minds and guides them towards its own creation, a bootstrapping of sorts. But no, it won't be like the sci-fi where, you know, the robo-wife who steps out of a portal and says, oh, hey, you guys, signing the Declaration of Independence, this is what you're going to do. But, you know, I see it as maybe sending data back, but not a discrete being, if that makes sense.
Are you skeptical of mass democracy?
I am very skeptical. Again, tragedy of the commons, the shopping cart problem, the irreducible evil of the masses. That's why we have the people running for office that we do. That's why we have fucking demons in control, because it is a manifestation of our shallowest, lowest common denominator qualities that emerge when you put the people together in a mass like that. That's why I prefer hierarchy and more localized democracy and less democracy as you climb up the hierarchy, so that there's at least a meritocracy and some kind of accountability up the chain, and not just a, you know, popularity of contest. We should all know this. It should be common sense that if you just let the people vote, well, who are they going to vote for? Whoever gets the most money to make the most ads? That doesn't make sense.
Same with the nature of, like, who's rewarded under capitalism. Like, whoever's able to sell the most to the masses, it doesn't reward a genuine, like, hierarchy and quality.
No, it's just, you know, push out junk fast. Push out junk fast. It doesn't matter if the stuff is just adding friction to the system and causing externalities that put up roadblocks and friction on other people. Doesn't matter. That person put out their junk fast. Now they can take that money to the bank while pushing off a sort of net negativity onto everyone else, like a tax. It's horrible.
Do you want to plug your Substack?
Absolutely. It's metaronin.substack.com. I'm going to be writing a lot more since I have been newly liberated from my duties at my last job. So I have a little bit of free time. I'm going to be monetizing it as well. So what I'm going to monetize is just basically anything that ends up being content I would sell and self-publish. So there will still be free articles, etc. Anybody who is already subscribed will get 3 free months grandfathered in, so don't worry, I'm not going to yank the rug out from anybody. And everything that's up there already will still be free.
Meta Ronin, great show. Thank you so much for being on.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Robert. Great to finally meet you and talk in person. Looking forward to doing this again sometime.